Welcome back to this Tuesday's Across the Movie Aisle, presented by Bulwark Plus. I'm your host, Sonny Bunch, culture editor of The Bulwark, and I'm joined, as always, by the award-winning Alyssa Rosenberg of The Washington Post and Peter Suderman of Reason Magazine. Alyssa, Peter, how are you today?
I'm, you know, paralyzed with electoral existential dread, but I'm all right.
I'm just happy to be talking about movies with friends.
First up, in controversies and non-controversies, if a studio releases what may be the final film by a legendary master of the form and doesn't bother advertising the release or putting it in more than a handful of theaters, does it make a sound? I'm pretty sure this is an age-old Zen question. And that's what we're about to find out with juror number two, Clint Eastwood's latest and possibly last film, which is getting dumped in 50 theaters by Warner Brothers. Now, when I first heard about this move, I was a little surprised. I assumed it was a platform release, right? You open in a few big cities. If it does well there, you expand it to medium-sized cities and then further and further out, like kind of concentric circles around the United States. But no, it looks like Warner Bros. Is just dumping it. They're just dumping it at all. They're not going to release any box office data, and it doesn't seem to be getting any serious awards campaign. It's just going to be in a handful of theaters. It's playing here in Dallas. I think it's playing in D.C., New York, L.A., a few other places. I guess on the one hand, we should be thankful that the film, which is about a man called to serve on a jury, who realizes midway through the case that he may actually have committed the hit and run the defendant is on trial for, is getting a release at all, given that this was originally purchased and intended to be a straight-to-max project. Okay, that's a small favor, but still, it's a nice one, I guess. I'm still surprised. Look, juror number two is the sort of low-risk, medium-to-high-reward movie Warner Brothers should be investing in. Here is my thinking, right? In the last decade, Eastwood has directed 7 movies prior to this one. And some of those were misses, for sure. Pictures like The Trouble with the Curve or Jersey Boys grossed under $50 million. Not a big hit, but also not a huge loss. You're not losing a ton of money there. American Sniper, though, did $500 million worldwide. This isn't American Sniper caliber stuff, right? It's not based on a best-selling book about a, you know, American hero, war guy. Like, there's just that's a different sort of thing, right? Or it's not something like Sully, which starred Tom Hanks. Again, it was about an American hero. There was a backstory there that people knew. That movie grossed $250 million worldwide. Huge hit. But then you've got something like The Mule, which was a surprise hit and grossed more than $100 million domestically. Look, I can't imagine juror number two cost that much to make. And the upside of spending $20 million or so in marketing for a modest release seems pretty high. This is the sort of thing that, again, you take a chance on and you hit big and it works out for everybody. I got to be honest, when I see news like this, it gives more credence to rumors that Warner Brothers is just completely out of cash. I've heard that they've shut down production on a handful of pictures. I don't know if that's true. Again, these are rumors. I've heard that they are pushing release dates because they don't want to pencil in market costs. I heard that there were some of the issues with Twister's overseas performance had to do with Warner Brothers totally skimping on the release strategy out there, you know, in terms of marketing and spending on the international release. Again, who knows? I don't know. They just don't seem to be spending much money at all. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they just are opening it very softly because they don't believe in the project. They think it's not that good. It's a bad movie. So don't throw good money after bad. Peter, you've seen it. You went to a press screening. Is it bad? Is it being dumped for that reason?
It's definitely not bad. I liked it quite a bit. I think I probably liked it more than some other critics, in fact. I think it's really it's not one of Clint Eastwood's all-time best movies, but that's because this is a guy who made Unforgiven and A Perfect World and Richard Jewell, which I think are all three of which I just think are truly fantastic films. But it is in the mode of Richard Jewell in a bunch of ways. It is a movie about judging people and about what justice demands and about the complexities of it. But this time it's focused specifically on the criminal justice system and the jury trial process. It's a fascinating movie that really kind of plays in the modes, plays with a lot of the themes that Eastwood has been working on for decades now. And it's really a shame that they are not opening this in more theaters and that they are treating this the way that they are. I think it's frankly, it's just strange to me that they're opening it in a small number of theaters with basically no advertising like this middle ground release rather than just going straight to max doesn't make any sense to me. This movie, if you should either open it big or you should go straight to max and just skip theatrical entirely or more or less entirely. But this kind of like, well, I guess if you live in a big market and you have a Google alert set up for Clint Eastwood system, makes even less sense to me. But the rumor here, or the some of the reporting, I guess I should say, that I have read about why this is happening, is that Warner Brothers basically no longer believes that pretty good upper middle brow adult thrillers will play at all in movie theaters. I don't know whether that's true. If it's true, it's incredibly depressing. But the fact is, if studios believe this, it becomes true. Because if studios believe this, movies like this will be dumped into 50 theaters. They won't make very much money. And then that will be evidence that movies like this don't make very much money. And what are we going to, like, it will become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I just find this, it's not just, I mean, we can talk about disrespectful to Clint Eastwood or whatever. Like, there is some reporting that Zaslav is like, we don't owe this guy any favors. Fair enough. It's business. Like, they don't. That is a reasonable position. But this is a movie that should play well with, particularly with adult viewers. It is a relatively inexpensive film. The reported budget is about $35 million. There's not zero risk here in opening this wide, but it's not a huge risk. And it's the kind of movie that I think a lot of viewers, especially a lot of viewers actually outside of major markets, in smaller markets, would in fact really like and might show up and pay for. Those are the people that those markets are already underserved. Older viewers are already underserved, and people who just want good contemporary storytelling that has an idea or a couple of ideas at the heart of it. Those folks are underserved, and it's really a shame that this movie is being abandoned. I think both for, you know, just kind of industry, like economic reasons, but also for cultural reasons. It's at least a pretty good movie, and maybe a very good one.
Yeah, Alyssa, I mean, reading about this, what always comes to mind, reading about any story like this, frankly, about the collapse of this type of movie, which we could maybe describe as like, it feels like what it feels like is a John Grisham adaptation from like the late 90s, right?
Yes, which I have frequently said I miss a lot.
Right.
Those movies were fun.
Exactly. Something like a Runaway Jury or a Time to Kill or
Civil Action.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch. And then thinking about that, what also comes to mind is Matt Damon's famous rant on Hot Ones about the state of the industry, right? Which we can summarize here very briefly as, once upon a time, you had an industry where you had so many revenue streams, including the theatrical release, then home video market, then home video rental and home video purchasing, and then, you know, the cable HBO tier of revenue. And that has all kind of collapsed. You know, theatrical has gone away. The home video window has collapsed entirely into whatever you can get on your streaming service or by sending it to Netflix or whatever. And as a result, you just don't get as many movies like this anymore. And that's a problem for the overall health of the industry, because it means a less diverse array of films.
Yeah. No, it's super depressing. But also just like, I know, you know, Peter, you said like business is business. They don't owe this guy anything. I mean, sure, fine, whatever. But I just feel like some grace goes a really long way. And, you know, Zaslav is a guy who has alienated a lot of people lately. And if this is going to be Clint Eastwood's last movie, why not send him off gracefully, right? Like, that goodwill would be worth something with people who make movies, even if people didn't turn out in huge numbers. I find it a bummer. Like, I literally didn't know this movie existed until you guys texted me about it. And I was like, oh, there's a new Clint Eastwood. Like, this might be my last chance to see a Clint Eastwood movie in a theater. Like, what the hell? I don't know. Make it an event. Like, I don't know. I am someone of sort of old-fashioned morals and manners and think that sometimes it's important to do things the right way. And if a legend of your industry is going to stop making movies or is going to retire, I don't know. That might be a good thing to be graceful about for human reasons, but also for reasons of like branding yourself as someone who's not a complete monster to work with. I don't know. Could just be me.
Yeah, and I'll say, you know, it's interesting when Warner Brothers was owned by AT&T, you know, again, I live in Dallas, and the AT&T headquarters is here. And when there was some, you know, just retrospective, like 50 years of Clint Eastwood or something like that. And they had a nice little display in the headquarters, and it had some posters and some props and stuff. You went and looked at it. It was just like, this is a nice little appreciation for a guy. And it's interesting that this is, you know, that was done by the quote unquote faceless corporation, whereas Warner Brothers, which is an actual movie studio and in theory should be better about this sort of thing, is just kind of burying it. And look, I also there's a secondary business argument here, right? Which is that, like, audiences show up for Clint Eastwood movies in which Clint Eastwood stars, right? That's the difference between something like, The Mule or whatever, and something like Richard Jewell. They don't necessarily want to see a movie directed by Clint Eastwood so much as they want to see Clint Eastwood on screen. And you say, well, he's not in this, so the heartland audiences that this sort of movie, kind of relies on to turn a profit, they're not going to be that interested because they just want to see Clint on screen. And I kind of get that. But like you say, I do think that there is something to be said for loyalty, for, you know, paying some amount of respect to the past. And
right. Yeah, I don't know. I put a high premium on decency and on sort of ceremony. And I don't know. I just think this is sad.
Yeah. I guess exit question here. Are you guys? Peter, you've already seen it. Alyssa, are you going to go see this at the Avalon? Or the Alamo? Is that a?
I'd like to try to get to it.
It doesn't look like it's playing at the Alamos, either Alamo in DC. Yeah, I just checked. So unless it's opening later at one of those Alamos, I think it's only playing at the Tyson's movie mall.
The AMC. Yeah, that makes sense. It's only playing at the AMC in my neighborhood too. So
yeah. And let me say, as a middle-aged lady with a standing, date night, deal with my babysitter, this is totally the kind of movie that I would have liked to go see with my husband. I don't know. There are young fogies like me too. Give us something to see in theaters.
The young fogey market demands to be represented. It's too bad. I don't know. It's sad. Sad times. Sad times. All right. We're not going to have a bonus episode this week as we dig out of the rubble of Election Day. Who knows, what will be left and who will be there to enjoy it. We'll see. We'll see how things go tonight. Hopefully we'll see you guys next week. Now on to the main event. Conclave. Speaking of, kind of movies for young fogies, I feel like Conclave falls pretty well into that mix. Conclave, directed by Edward Berger. Conclave is the story of the choosing of a new pope. Intrigue, deception, scandal. This movie has it all and more. We'll get into it in a second, but to discuss why this has become sort of a dark horse best picture candidate, we're going to have to get into some of the spoilers about the end of this movie. I think we all really want to talk about the end and who gets picked and why. So consider this your warning. If you stick around and you complain about what you're going to hear, going to send you to purgatory. I think that's the thing the Pope can do, doesn't he? Can't he point and shoot you away? I don't know. I'm not a theologian.
I don't think there are any Catholics on this podcast. So when I at least inevitably screw up something about a Catholic procedure.
Doctrine? So what you're saying is I can make up anything and nobody can call me out on it. All right.
I apologize to our listeners in advance.
Sorry, we're doing the blasphemy. Yeah. That's what we're doing. All right. Now that only the faithful remain, let us set the scene. You've got a liberal, reform-minded pope who has died. He's died, and they're picking the new one. Cardinal Lawrence, who's played by Ralph Fiennes, is dean of the College of Cardinals, and he must organize the difficult replacement process. He is aligned with the liberal-minded cardinals, and their champion is Cardinal Bellini, played by Stanley Tucci. And you can tell he's good because he denies wanting the appointment altogether, and also he says women should be allowed into the priesthood, and we have to, you know, liberalize the church and welcome everybody in.
That they should play a larger role in the curia, not necessarily.
Well, I think we know what that means, you know. Anyway, his main opponent is Cardinal Tedesco, who's played by Sergio Castellitto, and you can tell he's bad because he's an arch-conservative, and he hates diversity. He doesn't like any of it. He doesn't want any of these newcomers. Everyone should speak Latin, and we need an Italian pope. It's been too long since we had an Italian pope. In the mushy middle, you've got the conservative political knife fighter, Cardinal Tremblay, who's played by John Lithgow. Again, conservative, but not insanely so. Then you've got Cardinal Adeyemi, who's played by Lucien Mismati. Apologies to Mr. Lucien, who is a fiscal liberal and a social conservative, but the liberals are intrigued by this idea of electing the first black pope. They think that would be a real feather in their cap. And then you got Cardinal Benitez, played by Carlos Dietz. He's a bit of a wild card, ordained in secret by the pope because he is the Cardinal of Cabal, obviously a very dangerous assignment. When he shows up, there is something different about him. He's really just holy and beatific, and he's untainted by the common squabbling of these Vatican regulars. He likes turtles. He has served in war zones. He's undoubtedly washed the feet of refugees. Yay, he is very holy, this one. And before we get to the obvious, obvious conclusion of this film, or at least the obvious choice of who will wind up Pope, one that I literally never had a moment of doubt, like from the moment Benitez shows up on the screen. Like, it was like, okay, so he's gonna be new pope. That's what's happening here. There's all sorts of papal intrigue to resolve, right? Did the recently deceased pope demand Tremblay's resignation before he died? What for? Why? What secret is the African Cardinal Adeyemi hiding? And what does it have to do with a nun called in to service the conclave's kitchen? Will Lawrence reclaim his faith before things come to a close? Why are there bombs going off outside the church? And while that last one is never really answered, really? Everything else sorts itself out as the procedural goes through its paces. And here's what I will say about Conclave in its favor. Berger knows how to frame and light a shot. The movie looks great. It's fantastically paced. It really is very well paced. We move very quickly toward, again, the fairly obvious conclusion. And there are four separate performances in this movie that I would consider awards caliber. They're just really fun to watch, right? Just dynamite stuff from Fiennes, Tucci, Lithgow, and Castellitto, the Italian Cardinal Tedesco. They're simply magnetic on the screen. It's hard to go wrong with a lineup like that. They do fantastic work. It's a fun watch. I had a fun time watching it. And yet, it's a pretty slight movie. I was kind of confused by all the Best Picture talk for the first hour and 50 minutes or so of this movie. Even after Cardinal Benitez delivered a speech that I've seen people describe as Sorkin-esque, and I think that's almost unfair to Aaron Sorkin in the kind of schmaltzy, good-feeling liberalness of it, right? It's the sort of movie that you kind of imagine all the other popes standing around and doing the slow clap as they march back into the voting room and hand him the papacy. And then the last 10 minutes of the movie start, and all the Best Picture talk starts clicking into place because it is revealed that, spoilers, this is the spoiler here, Benitez is intersex. He's not trans, he's intersex. He went in for surgery, they found ovaries in there. And, oh my God, Pope with ovaries. He won't even get the ovaries taken out via hysterectomy, which is a kind of an interesting little thing there. Anyway, he wants to keep the organs he was born with, put it that way. I don't even really care about the blasphemy here. I'm not Catholic. The movie itself doesn't actually care about the blasphemy because it doesn't want to wrestle with what it would actually mean for the church or for these cardinals or for believers around the world or, frankly, for intersex people around the world. I could just feel my eyes roll out of my head as it happened because, again, it's just so predictable that this is precisely the sort of thing that would lead people to be like, yes, This is something we should consider for Best Picture. This is now an important movie. It's not a trashy airport thriller anymore. This is an important movie. That is incredibly depressing to me. Alyssa, what did you make of Conclave? I think you got out of it like 15 minutes ago. You came straight here from the theater.
It was a little bit more than that. I, like you, I mean, felt like this was just sort of, you know, handsome and well-made and just extremely enjoyable to look at. It is incredible. Like, and there are all of these little sort of observational details about the church that were, you know, just funny or interesting, right? I mean, like, part of what's hilarious about Tedesco, he's like constantly walking around with like a cardinal red vape. Yes. Like, he doesn't smoke cigarettes, but he's got
vaping
his, like,
cardinal. I did enjoy that.
Yeah, he's like, you know, you've got
the, well, they have to leave their cigarettes outside of the conclave. We see them smoking outside at the beginning. I think, I'm not sure he was part of the smoking group, but part of the point is he figures out a way around the rules.
Yes, exactly. You know, you, and then there's another shot of a cardinal with like a bright red iPhone getting his fix before he
goes
inside.
The Pope luggage was a nice touch as well. They all have like their roller handbags or whatever. I loved it.
Yeah, I think the movie did a good job sort of, you know, sketching in without sort of going really deep on the question of what it means that the church is much more tilted towards the global south, right? And in the novel, Benitez is actually Filipino, not Mexican, which would have sort of underscored that point even more. You know, you see a number of sort of Asian popes in the background. And that sort of tension between both the liberal modernizers and the conservative traditionalists, as well as sort of the global north and the global south, and the ways that those don't map neatly onto each other, I think is just sort of handled in the, you know, visual and script details really nicely. But I will say that my, you know, I guess I'm not sure I totally buy your argument, Sunny, that it's sort of the last minute twist, which I found handled in like that whole final sort of 15 minutes of the movie is just incredibly cheesy, right? It's just big slice of cheese. And I don't know if that's why people are talking about this as an Oscar movie, but it's like, it's a movie that like says something about Catholicism, right? About like religion. And I guess I'm not, maybe you've seen things that indicate that that sort of that twist is what
I'm just cynical.
Thinking.
I'm cynical is what I am.
Yes. I mean, the real polarity in this podcast is less political than between like my, you know, naivete and your cynicism.
The only thing this movie needed to be a better Oscar contender was a scene where all of the cardinals sit around and watch their favorite movie together and talk about how inspired they were.
Yeah. You know, I mean, but I really enjoy, you know, sort of Isabella Rossellini around the edges of this movie as sort of the watchful nun who's like kind of waiting for the moment to assert herself. And who, you know, who is sort of in her own way as much a political player as Lawrence is. And so, you know, I mean, I think for me, it's less the, I mean, the reveal is handled and handled and kind of abandoned in a way that is frustrating. But so it's like the bomb. I mean, the bombing itself is so ridiculous that, and, you know, it doesn't even necessarily feel that meaningful as a sign of their separation from the outside world, right? I mean, it's just like, because it's just like sort of a random terrorist attack that like the world suddenly intrudes, but it doesn't have any impact that the world suddenly, you know, intrudes, except maybe that Lawrence like feels like there's this sign that in fact he shouldn't actually be Pope just at the moment when he was coming around to the idea that maybe he should. I don't know. It just, it is so, I almost would have enjoyed, I think, watching this as like a, I mean, I feel torn about this movie because I do think it's really well paced. I do think it looks great. There's part of me that would have been fascinated to watch this as a mini series where you get into like all of the different factions and sort of get some more characters. Because I do think there's something very interesting going on here in, you know, and there, because there are a lot of interesting developments in the church happening around the sort of global north-south polarity.
Well, Alyssa, can I just drill down on one point? You said it's the movie has interesting thoughts about the church. And I want to push back on that slightly because I don't think it actually has any thoughts at all about the church. It doesn't have any thoughts about faith, really, or doctrine or any of that stuff. It doesn't have anything to say about any of that. And the movie on the script level very explicitly frames all of this as we are the liberals. They are the conservatives.
And I'm like, sorry. I should have definitely said that like what I meant was that it's like it sprinkles in all of these different, you know, sort of interesting details that sort of indicate where the church is at. I would not obviously say that it, you know, it is a substantive movie about sort of doctrinal crises in the church, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is, and this is, I think it would be a more interesting movie if it had drilled into a lot of these ideas about global North versus global South versus, you know, traditionalist beliefs and in a way that just isn't, I mean, the problem with this movie is that it does all feel kind of like caricature. You know, you have, again, the very arch conservative Catholic who is like, who is literally giving side eye to the African cardinals and is like, do we really want these guys running the church? Cardinal Lawrence, am I right? And Lawrence is like, you disgust me with your racism and your bigotry. I have to go somewhere else now. I don't know.
Yeah. But it is, I mean, it is just an interesting question, right? I mean, there are, you know, increasingly, like, there may be more, you know, Catholics in a couple of years in the Democratic Republic of the Congo than in Italy, right? It's like, what does it mean for a church's center of power to shift like that? And that's sort of what I mean when I say that I wish it had been maybe I would have loved to see the version of this that was a mini series, because, you know, those shifts and those cultural nuances have been so much more interesting dealt with at length and sort of from a perspective of multiple main characters in a way.
Peter, what did you make of, you also saw it today, earlier today. What are your instant thoughts about Conclave?
So I agree with you guys to some degree, but I actually, I think you are missing what this movie is saying about the church. That's not to say it has deep thoughts, but I do think this movie has a very particular viewpoint about the church. And to explain that, I want to take us back a couple of years to Edward Berger's previous film, which we all watched and talked about on this podcast, All Quiet on the Western Front. This was a Best Picture nominee, and it was beautiful. If anything, even more beautiful than this film. Technically excellent, but it was a movie about how war is this godless and horrible thing that people use for awful causes, mostly sort of conservative nationalist causes, but maybe tinted with religion as well. And it's just this quite hit you over the head with how awful and how cruel war is. And this is, it's a kind of, it's not quite a nihilistic movie, but it is a movie that takes a cold and dim view of humanity. And this is a movie that transposes that view, I think, onto the Catholic Church. And this is what the bombings are all about. But even more than that, I think this is a movie that is about how the church tries to keep itself going, and it tries to sort of cloak itself in ceremony and all of this kind of sacredness. And the outside world keeps intruding, whether or not, no matter what they do, and there's nothing that they can do to stop it. And you see that from the very beginning, not just, let's forget the bombings that interrupt. You see that when they take the Pope's body out of his chambers, and you have all of this papal ceremony. They remove the ring, and and just in that moment they remove the ring, he has suddenly become a corpse, and it's just a little hard and kind of ugly and unpleasant to get that ring off, and they kind of have to chip it apart, and it just goes through the nasty physical details of this, and the way that they are trying to cloak this in ceremony and sacredness and beauty. And then the EMT, or I don't know, whatever they're called, the emergency workers who are dressed in their own ceremonial uniforms of the emergency workers who show up and are totally out of place in this holy world of the church. And the point is, this guy is just a corpse. He's just an empty sack of blood and guts. This is, to be clear, if Catholic listeners are listening, this is not my view. I am saying this is what the movie is trying to tell us. And the movie lingers at the beginning on the body bag of the Pope as he's being transported away, because it wants to reinforce to us the unspiritual, physical, secular nature of this is just a man. And ultimately, the church is just made of men, literally men, or, well, except until the end when we get to something that's maybe, but it's not quite just men, right? And this is a movie about how the bureaucracies and organizations and traditions of men are ugly and sort of all, mostly about power seeking. This is a movie that, yes, you can say it sort of takes the liberal side of the argument here in the sense of the of presenting us with liberal Catholic reformers who are the good guys. But I think even more than that, this is a movie that just takes an extremely dim view of the church and of church hierarchy and bureaucracy, and just sees that entirely as a tool for self-serving power seeking from almost all parties. That said, I think just sort of as a, like on a kind of minute to minute basis, as a cinematic construction, it's pretty excellent. It's pulpy. It's kind of super elevated trash in a way, right? This is a pulp thriller, and it's really well done. Although the twist is super eye rolly. Like, I mean, I almost cackled in the theater. There's like, oh my god, come on, really? That's where we're going with this?
Someone in my theater literally like said out loud, "What?" In like a cartoon old person yes. voice, because the average age in my movie theater was about 67.
A completely reasonable reaction. But up until we get to that point, what we actually have is, yes, it's not quite a murder mystery. This is a detective thriller with Ralph Fiennes as essentially a detective character. And that's not that surprising, because this is based on a novel by Robert Harris, who has written a bunch of historical fiction that often takes the form or something like the form of a detective novel. And his work is just intricately plotted and excellent, and always has like a really incredible twist at the end. And his twists are almost always, here is something that undermines, it's not just something you didn't expect, but here is something that undermines the foundation of the society we have been exploring in the past. You see that in many, many of his novels, and of course see that here. And so he's looking for sort of the cracks in the foundations of societies that have built themselves up on myth and lore and legend and history and tradition. And he's trying to say, he's always trying to say, and yet there is this thing underneath that could cause it all to fall apart. And so this is a really interesting melding of, I think, those two worldviews of Edward Berger's secular liberalism, his real sense that like humanity is kind of depraved and awful, and Robert Harris is just excellent and intricate detective novel style plotting mixed with this deep sense that if you look close enough at any society, at any organization of human beings, you will find that there is a kind of fundamental contradiction, and that there is something that is going to, like, at the heart of it, that could make it collapse at any time. And on that level, just as like as a pulp, like again, as basically a detective story set in the middle of a conclave, not quite literally detective story, but pretty close in the way that it plays out, I basically enjoyed it. The performances are very good. It's beautiful to look at and so well paced, but it's ridiculous. This is an absurd movie. And I think the movie's biggest problem is, in some ways, something that connects all of this, which is Berger is so self-serious about all of this stuff. This was true in All Quiet on the Western Front as well. He is so self-serious. But the thing that is undermining his own enterprise is the fact that this is like kind of pulpy trash that he is dressing up. And it makes it kind of goofy at the end. It makes you go, what?
Yeah, and I'm like, it's interesting. It's like I find myself sort of questioning my own reaction to it. And I'm trying to figure out what that's about, right? And to be clear, you know, I'm finishing this movie, you know, a couple hours ago. And I can't tell if it's like I'm reacting to the idea of like the sort of, haha, someone's genitals aren't what you think they are. Or, you know, someone's chromosomes aren't what you think they are. As like in a, you know, which has an old sort of transphobic history in cinema, right? Like the secret trans person. And this is not, it's not that, obviously, right? Not least because there isn't an element of sexual panic here, right? It's sort of theological panic. And I don't even know if theological panic is the right way to describe it. But it's a really hard thing to do without either sort of being aware or sort of situated within the cinematic history of these kinds of plot twists, And to have it be something that you just don't explore at all, right? It just...
So I agree with you guys that this movie doesn't have any doctrinal or theological ideas, and it's not really interested in the cultural, like the broader cultural implications and like what would happen to the church afterwards. Because the movie sees it, I think the movie sees itself as just much more of a broadside against the church generally, and being about the ways in which the physical, ugly material world will always intrude on these sacred spaces and the idea of sacredness, because I think, frankly, in this movie's view, in Edward Berger's view, sacredness is bullshit. It doesn't exist.
I don't know that I agree with you about that, because, like, I mean, ultimately, what happens in the movie is that the conclave chooses someone who appears to be profoundly decent and is at peace with the thing that will ultimately cause sort of controversy for the church, right? So it's like the outside world, there's a tension in that, you know, they're trying so hard to keep the outside world, you know, out, but complexity comes in, and arguably, like, complexity is sanctity in the movie.
But the person who comes in and wins in the end comes through, does so by preaching a message of peace, and then by literally physically embodying change and the combinate, right, and sort of bringing women in, or bringing non, you know, sort of expanding the church's view of gender or something, right? It is embodied in that physical body and in that physical person, because this is it. I just think this is an extremely anti sacred, anti-spiritual movie that just like rejects any sense of the numinous or the spiritual, and wants to remind us constantly about the modern physicality.
No, that's totally wrong. Because, all right, so let's talk about one pivotal moment in the film, right? There's a pivotal moment in the film where Lawrence, Cardinal Lawrence, who's played by Ralph Fiennes, who has been gaining momentum to be the next pope, and who had denied it the whole time, was like, I don't actually want this. I don't want this. I don't have faith anymore. I don't have the spiritual well to be pope. And he finally gets talked into accepting the idea that he could be pope, right? And he voices the name that he would want to be pope. And then he writes his own name on the ballot, and he goes and he puts it in the plate, and he says the oath that, you know, this is who I believe would best be pope. And literally as he does that, a bomb goes off and explodes, because he is rejecting his own idea of what the best thing for the faith would be. It's literally God blowing up this window to make you stop. It's literally an act of God. To the extent that this is why I think Berger and the screenwriter don't actually get into who is blowing things up outside, it is meant for us to feel like an act of God, to not be a moment of civil unrest or whatever.
I just really didn't see it that way in real time. In retrospect, I can see that, particularly with the way that shot is framed with the light coming in. At the same time,
there's the sound of a dove.
As I was watching this, I just thought, oh, this is the first time the bomb goes off. There's an early bomb that just shakes the conclave, and they don't even tell everybody what it's about. And then there's the second bomb that actually does blow out the window and causes some minor damage to the cardinals in the conclave.
That lets the light of God stream into them.
When I watched that, I just was like, oh, this is just the reminder that the outside world cannot be held at bay by all of your fancy ceremonial trappings, by the history and the tradition, by these beautiful windows and incredible paintings. Instead, that world is going to come and attack you, because that world is the real world, and you exist. Again, this is what I think the movie is trying to say. And these people exist in a fake sacred world that is not real.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. So what do we think? Thumbs up or thumbs down on Conclave? Alyssa?
I feel like it's hard for me to recommend it because I'm frustrated with how it ends. But for like 90% of it, I would say I'm thumbs up.
Peter?
Same as Alyssa. The ending, I think, makes more sense in the context of a Robert Harris style of storytelling than in the way that in what Edward Berger gives us. But I, it's a well-made movie that is pretty entertaining throughout with a admittedly completely ridiculous cackle-worthy ending. Put that on your movie poster.
You know that meme that's like the horse and the first part of the horse is really well drawn and like the middle part of the horse is really well drawn and then the last part of the horse is like a sketch with a goofy face on it? That's exactly what this movie is. This movie is the horse with the goofy face because it is so ridiculous at the end. It is such a silly, nonsensical... Again, it's not even the big, you know, intersex twist that's ridiculous. It's that... dumb speech where, like, you just imagine the Cardinals doing a slow cardinal clap. I was like, oh my God, spare me this. It's ridiculous. Anyway, that's my rating. Goofy Sonny, face horse.
The real twist is that Sonny was not spared.
Yes. All right. That is it for today's show. Many thanks to our producer, Sebastian Hughes, without whom this program would sound much worse. Get out there and vote. It's Tuesday. Go vote. Make sure to swing by Bulwark Plus on Friday for our bonus episode. Tell your friends. A strong recommendation from a friend is basically the only way to grow podcast audiences. If you don't grow, we'll die. If you did not love today's episode, please complain to me on Twitter at Sonny Bunch. I'll mention that this is, in fact, the best show in your podcast feed. See you guys on next Tuesday.